Our fifth case for this morning is Dennis Ford against Mintec Shapes and Services. Mr. Work.
Good morning. My name is Frederick Work, and I represent the plaintiff appellant, Ms. Cross. This is a matter growing out of an employment situation in which Mr. Ford causing to be filed a complaint charging four areas of violation of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The matter was filed on May 5th. I believe that the defendants filed a motion for summary judgment on September 5th of 2008. It was responded to in October of 2008. The court ruled in a written opinion on March 31st of 2009. The areas of concern that we have and the reason that we have perfected this appeal is that I'm of the impression that the court ignored the affidavits that were filed of the plaintiff and ignored the deposition references that were cited in our response to the motion for summary judgment, and ended and concluded findings that are inconsistent with those affidavits. There are a number of instances that I could cite. For example, the court on page 5 of its opinion talks about one of the things that the plaintiff had complained about was this constant reference to him as a black man.
Well, let me ask you about that. In the appellee's brief at footnote 3, they indicate that for purposes of summary judgment only, they are not contesting the allegation that this behavior on Mr. Wampler's part lasted for more than 2 days. Now, if I understand your allegation, it is that the behavior of Mr. Wampler lasted for more than a year.
14 months.
Right. And so there's a big difference between 2 days and 14 months. And one could imagine if you were to accept the 14-month version of the story, that although perhaps each incident isn't, as the law uses the term, severe, the pervasiveness of it might be something on which a hostile work environment claim could go forward. Now, I take it that the only evidence in the record we have of this is Mr. Ford's, is it his deposition or his affidavit?
His affidavit as well as his deposition, Judge.
So that's, you know, he just reports that this keeps going on and going on, and the company says, no, it didn't the minute we found out about it. But what's Mr. Ford's evidence about reporting this co-employee harassment to the proper authorities in the company?
First of all, Judge, I'm not certain that it's a co-employee as such. This was a plant manager, this Mr. Wampler. At least that is contended by Mr. Ford in his affidavit.
He's not Mr. Is he Mr. Ford's supervisor?
He is a plant manager who, I guess he has some supervisory capacity as it relates to Ford.
Well, the reason the report is important anyway is that under the Supreme Court's decisions in Burlington Industries against Ellerth and Farragher against City of Boca Raton, even if it's a supervisor, if there's no tangible employment action, then there is this process of, you know, using the company's harassment policy and making a proper complaint to people. So I think one way or the other, you have to answer, how did he call this to the company's attention?
Okay. He went to Human Resources within days of this being of this pattern of conduct on the part of Wampler, reported it to Human Resources, and in his affidavit he says that he was told that they would get back to him. They never got back to him.
This is Mrs. Beemsterboer?
Yes.
Then after that happened, because I'm concerned about the same thing, he never went back to Human Resources to find out what happened or to lodge a further complaint, did he?
No, he did
not. In that whole year?
Yes. He was told that they would look into it and...
But it makes it difficult, I think, for you to make that argument that it continued for a year and it was so horrible when he didn't go back and follow up with Human Resources to find out what was going on.
If you look at the total picture, Judge, the total picture and the atmosphere of what was going on over there, this man is working in a crew of about 20 people. It's in La Porte, Indiana. He's the only black working there.
Right.
He needs his job. He's making $9 or $10 an hour. So he didn't appreciate it. It created a hostile work environment. It demeaned him. And he thought that he had done the right thing under the policies, as you suggested, by reporting it to Human Resources, which was one of the avenues to express this. And it still continued. He's sitting there taking the position that I can't jeopardize my job, or I don't want to jeopardize my job, and maybe they're not going to do anything about it.
But, you know, the Supreme Court and actually this court have, I think, acknowledge that that is something that employees frequently feel, whether it's people who are trying to bring forward complaints based on race or sex or disability or whatever protected ground it is. It's something, despite the anti-retaliation provisions of the statutes, that people consider risky because they need their jobs. That's why they're working. They need the money. And yet, the balance that the Supreme Court has drawn for us requires that affirmative step. It requires making sure that the employer knows about the problem so that you don't blame the employer for the problem without giving them an ample opportunity to address it.
And that's what he did when he reported within 2 days the fact that Wampler was going around calling him black man or African-American man or whatever it was that he wanted to call. My concerns are that the ruling of the court just ignores that. They say on page 5 of the judge's opinion, he seems to put all of this within a capsule of like 2 days. Obviously, a trier of fact, hearing those facts that it went on for 14 months, may very well have found that this racial harassment constituted a hostile work environment. The other concerns that I have are with regards to this discrimination in pay.
But as to that, I found this record, as did the district court, inadequate in that I thought that the record was just too thin on pointing to a similarly situated person.
My concerns are these. There was nothing in the record to show that it was ever communicated to anyone that there was a reward for working, for doing a mixing job. That was never in the record.
But do we know that the people who were paid more were doing exactly the same set of jobs that Mr. Ford was doing? It's Mr. Ford's burden to show that.
Mr. Ford, in his affidavit, suggests that they were to be paid by position, the various positions that you...
You need a deposition from the company about that, and that maybe that's what Mr. Ford thought, but I don't know why that's
competent
evidence.
Because he was told that, Judge, by the...
We need to know if the company is paying him differently from paying other people. We need to know what's the company what set of jobs are the other people being paid more performing?
Did you ever try to get that information?
No.
From the company?
No, I did not.
Or request to admit, or just a subpoena for their records? Because he knew some of these employees that he said
yes.
were getting paid more, so he had their names?
Yes. And I believe in our response to summary judgment, we produced pay stubs. And he,
right,
of course, by inference, if not expressly, indicated that they're doing the same thing. In fact, he's saying that he does one more task.
Right.
And those pay stubs can be helpful if there's more explanation other than your client's explanation. You know, there was nothing more in the record other than the pay stub.
I understand
which
that.
Which can be helpful. I'm not saying it can't be helpful, but it has to be put in a context, and it's difficult to do that when it's just the word of your client. Versus somebody else from the company or one of these coworkers, or getting the payroll records and looking exactly at what the positions were, or looking at the work history of some of these people, these other people.
Those are matters, Judge. I agree with you that the ideal situation would have been for me to produce that type of information.
You need to wrap up now, Mr. Work. So.
However, I do believe that there are tribal issues that should be this matter should go to trial. This man should have his day in court. And that's where we are, Judge.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Wilder.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Michael Wilder on behalf of Mintec Shapes and Services, Incorporated.
So, Mr. Wilder, why don't you begin by explaining footnote 3 in your brief to me, because I think you are appropriately saying there that since this is summary judgment, and we understand for purposes of summary judgment only, you're not contesting the allegation that the alleged harassment occurred for more than 2 days. But Mr. Ford says it goes on for 14 months, and to me that makes this quite a different case than the one that the district court described.
That is true, Your Honor. We did not contest that it went on longer than 2 days.
Well, so you have to be contesting it went on as long as he said it went on, because this is direct testimony that he's quite capable of offering his experience.
Correct, Your Honor. But we feel that the language that was used, black and African American, is a common phrase that's used in everyday language. And Mr. Ford, in fact, said that he refers to himself as black and African American.
Of course. And yet, if for 14 months, you know, I'm from Texas, and if for 14 months, you know, somebody referred to me as a gringo, you know, I would get old after a while. And just calling somebody by a racial designation, however accurate, whether it was white or black or Latina or whatever, instead of your name, it's disrespectful over that amount of time.
I also think that speaks volumes that Mr. Ford never actually complained about the incident more than one time. He complained after the 2 days that we're alleging it occurred, and then he didn't allege any other instances where he has reported to HR or to a supervisor.
So that may be a stronger point for you than this other, because I think you're stuck with the 14 months, and I think you're stuck with the fact that if for 14 months somebody refers to him instead of by his first name or Mr. Ford or anything else, just by a racial designation, while perhaps not severe, I'll agree with you that it's not a derogatory racial designation, but it's still objectifying, that if he never goes back to human resources. He says that Wampler finally stops harassing him when he filed the EEOC charge in April of 06.
It's true, Your Honor.
So we have to take that as, since it's summary judgment, that's the record that we need to, for the sake of this stage of the proceedings, work with.
Exactly, Your Honor.
All right.
Mr.
And you would agree that's not what the district court did. I just went back and looked at that page 5 that Mr. Work referred to, and the district court says Wampler referred to plaintiff as black, African-American, or black man 2 or 3 times that same day until he was confronted by another coworker, Miguel Altieri. Wampler stopped using these terms and has not used those terms since that time. Well, that's just an erroneous for summary judgment purposes, an erroneous statement, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
At the same time, I believe, too, as it was pointed out earlier, he only complained that one time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's...
So how often is an employee supposed to nag human resources? You know, once is not enough, but 20 times is too many, or...
I believe once or twice is not enough, is enough, but as long as if it continues, then it's on the employee to go back and speak to at least his supervisor or HR to make sure that it ends.
Where does the Supreme Court or anybody else say that you've got to just keep going back and your first complaint, when ignored, needs to be followed up on?
It doesn't.
Okay. You want us to make up a rule. Once isn't enough, but twice is.
It's that. Mr. Ford has also alleged for his racial harassment claim that his strongest basis is that he was called a gorilla in the jungle by one of his coworkers. However, this was not actually the testimony that was presented during his deposition. This is actually a misstatement of the record. Mr. Ford actually said that Mr. Nuzzo told him, "I will shut you down like a gorilla in the jungle," which was in reference to his telephone privileges. However, there's no evidence that this was, in fact, based on Mr. Ford's race, and there's no evidence that Mr. Ford actually complained about this actual incident. There are also in his appellate brief three other bases that Mr. Ford has indicated that to substantiate his racial harassment claim.
For factual clarification, is Mr. Ford still working at the plant?
Yes, he is, Your Honor.
And his pay and nothing else has ever changed as a result of all of this?
No. He's just been getting his usual annual increases, spirit increases.
Now, getting back to this one time he filed a complaint, what's the normal procedure at MNTEC for handling and dealing with these complaints? Because you're not disputing that they didn't get back to him, are you?
No.
I mean, there's no documentation or anything saying they got... I mean, what's the normal procedure? Isn't there a process for getting back to people that make such allegations?
The process would be for him to report the incident to his HR manager or to his supervisor, and for the supervisor to investigate the claim, and if it's valid, then to move forward.
And then what about notice to an employee? Is that part of the process?
Yes, to speak with the employee, yes. And then if harassment or discrimination is found, to actually discipline the employee that... is responsible.
And that wasn't the trail here.
And actually, in this case, Wampler was actually disciplined.
I know that they, because some other coworkers substantiated, this is what took place over that two-day situation. But getting back to Ford, they never got back to Ford on it, according to Ford.
It's not in the record that they did.
So the normal process, though, would be to notify the employee. So there's no documentation showing they got back to Ford on what actually happened.
There's documentation that his supervisor spoke to Mr. Wampler. Mr. Wampler's supervisor spoke to him, and that, you know, the harassment ended.
Right.
So,
but I'm just saying to Ford, mm-hmm. you know, because the record, as counsel pointed out from his standpoint, is nobody got back to Ford.
That's true.
But it is part of the normal policy to get back to the person who's made the complaint.
I would say so.
Any indication as to why it wasn't followed here?
I do not.
In the record?
For the record, it's not in the record, no. Mr. Ford also alleges that Mr. Humphreys told him that he didn't have to worry about being terminated because he's African American and MNTEC wanted to appear to be integrated. However, these allegations are not severe or pervasive. It was only made on one occasion. It's not caustic on its face. Mr. Ford has also alleged that he was prevented from bringing his grandchildren to Christmas parties unless he brought gifts for his grandchildren. However, there's no evidence on the record as well that this was ever done because of his race or that anyone else was actually treated more favorably than Mr. Ford, who was not African-American.
So the policy on gifts at the Christmas party is that everybody pays for their grandchildren?
Yes. And in this case, Mr. Ford...
I thought your argument was actually more about omissions, that there wasn't evidence that other people were not similarly required to pay for their grandchildren.
Right. That's what I meant. Yeah. Yeah. Mr. Ford has also alleged today, as Mr. Works stated that he was subject to harassment because he was the only African-American at the plant. However, as we can see from the record, there's no evidence in the record to suggest that that was ever the case. And there's no evidence to suggest that the demographics of a workplace in and of itself is insufficient to create a racial harassment claim. Mr. Ford has also argued that we presented no evidence to the district court that the alleged conduct did not actually affect his job. However, during his deposition, Mr. Ford actually testified that the harassment did not affect his job while he was working at Mintec.
I have to say, I mean, this court has, since the word hellish was used in one case, looked more carefully at the Harris against Forklift Systems case. A workplace doesn't have to descend all the way down below the ninth ring. A workplace can be a racially harassing workplace without truly hellish conditions. So I think the district court might have been a little too ready to say that, you know, as long as you're tough enough to survive the harassment, you don't have a claim. That's not what the Supreme Court said in Harris.
In conclusion, because I see my time's running out, I'd like to say that Mr. Ford has failed to show genuine issues of material fact with respect to his racial harassment claim, his equal pay claim, and his retaliation claim. Thank you, Your Honors.
Well, thank you. Now, Mr. Work, your time expired, so we will take this case under advisement and move on to